Okay. Would you like to know how I selected the topic for this evening? I just opened up Bhagavad Gita and whatever page it opened to, that was the topic. And then I thought, it would be really nice to have a class that involves the kids. So the first part of the class is going to be a kid's quiz. Vignesh, don't go anywhere. Move your drum so I can see you. And I see a couple of kids in the back, but you can volunteer because I'm going to be looking at you. You're far outnumbered, Vignesh. The girls are far greater than the boy over here. So you're going to have to be very vocal, all right? Tonight is smart night for Vignesh. Okay. Why don't you move a little bit so I can get eye contact with our three smartest kids over here. Not to say that the two in the front are anything less than the three over there. So, I'm going to ask several questions, and you're going to supply some answers. And a good thing for you to know in advance is there are lots of right answers. It's not like I'm looking for one answer that's the right answer, and everything else, there's going to be a buzzer that goes, wah, saying you got the wrong answer. Lots of good right answers, okay? Vignesh, pay attention. Okay. So, some wandering soul has spent lifetime after lifetime after lifetime trying to find happiness. Different species of life, different positions of living, different climates, different cultures, different languages, different this, different that. They finally come to a position in 2009 and they realize this isn't working. Something's fundamentally wrong here. It's not just I need to do it differently. I need to learn some more skills. I need to get some more this or some more that. There's something fundamentally wrong with the whole program. I want out of here. I want to be with Krishna. Yes, I want to be with Krishna. And I just have to find the right U-turn so I can get out of here and be with Krishna. Sounds like it should be, you know, pretty doable thing, right? But it's not as easy as that. Why? Why isn't it just a matter of, you know, doing a U-turn and you're heading in the right direction and you're zoom, zoom, you're back to Godhead. Why is it difficult? There's lots of right answers. Hint. That's a very nice answer. Anyone else would like to offer a nice, very nice answer? Or embellish that one, your own thoughts? Really? You don't know why it's so difficult?
Maybe like you still didn't realize Krishna fully yet, and you're like having some like problem, like not giving up things yet.
Okay. After the class, I'll ask you, what are those things that you're having a hard time giving up? We won't ask you publicly. Maybe we can go a little bit, well, see what else others have to say. I can't hear you.
The past, for so many lifetimes, it's been like, in so many, we've been covered in ignorance.
Yeah.
So, like, we were conditioned.
Conditioning is strong.
Yeah, so to get rid of the conditioning takes a while.
Okay, sounds very much like it's a duet here. You're in agreement with one another. Right? Similar. Right? Okay. Well, what might help us with developing that quality that you say, you know, it's every thought and every word and everything?
Go ahead.
It's your follow-up. Go ahead.
Huh?
Hey, that's a good answer. That's a Bhagavatam answer. You heard her answer? By serving other devotees, then that helps us develop our desire to serve Krishna. It's exactly what Srimad Bhagavatam says. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. By serving the devotees, by serving the Bhagavatas, one develops an attraction for Bhagavan. And that's what Bhagavatas are there for, to attract us, remind us of, and attract us to Bhagavan. And by serving such Bhagavatas, and the book Bhagavata, that's hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then nashta prayeshu abhadreshu, you know, abhadra, there's subhadra, and there's abhadra. Well, there's bhadra and there's abhadra. And then there's subhadra. So, bhadra means auspicious. And subhadra means very auspicious. And abhadra is inauspicious. The nashta means destroyed. Nashta. Prayeshu abhadreshu. Nityam. That was that other part that you said. Everything. Nityam, it means always. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. At least regularly. That's like gentle. Regularly. Very good. Srinidhi, you had your hand up. Don't tell me you're speechless. You have to do which? You need to have association of devotees. Okay, well, let's go down that path. Here we are. We're in the association of devotees. Have you seen Krishna yet? Why isn't it? It should be easy. obstacles in the middle of our life. Because you were speaking about the so many lifetimes and so many cultures and so many languages and so many experiences. That's a little bit like what they were saying. There's all this clutter, all this conditioning. Right? That's your point also. Just said it in a nice way. Different nice way. Okay. Would you like to volunteer something? Should I repeat the question? It would make it easier. Okay. You're a nice spirit soul. He's trying to be a nice spirit soul. And at a certain point, you realize there's something, I don't belong in this place. There's something fundamentally, like, I don't like this place. I don't fit in this place. It's a flawed place. I want to be with Krishna. And let's say, you know, so you meet a devotee and the devotee gives you a Bhagavad Gita. And you start reading Bhagavad Gita and you find out, hey, this is good news. I'm spirit soul. I'm not this body after all. So I should just, like, be with Krishna, spirit soul with Krishna. So it sounds like a great program. And it doesn't happen so quickly. It's not easy. Why is it not easy? You're not chanting enough. That's a good answer. So what's the connection between chanting enough and making it easy? So you're giving the items of sadhana bhakti. If you do sadhana bhakti, it can make it a little easier. And it makes it easier because what does sadhana do that makes it easier? Chanting, reading, associating with devotees, nice kirtan. Why does that make it easier? That's good. Now we're back to always remember Krishna and everything that you say and do. It helps you always remember Krishna. Very nice. Okay, you all go to the same Sunday school, I can tell. Your answers resonate very nicely with Krishna's message in Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in Bhagavad Gita, here's another perspective. By the way, I asked this question in Nashville, Tennessee, about a week ago, and a 7-year-old girl said, spirit soul says yes to Krishna, but the body says, I want sense gratification. And that inspired another one who said, and then the mind says, I want to be independent. I said, you guys hit the number. It's difficult because, well, you know, it's conditioning said it another way. The spirit soul says, I want to go to Krishna. I had enough of it here. But conditioning, the body is saying, no, sense gratification. And the mind is saying, this kind of sense gratification, that kind of sense gratification, I want to be independent. I don't want to always think of Krishna and always remember Krishna and always... I lose my independence. The rebellious mind, the in the language of Bhagavad Gita, there's different, you know, when Arjuna asks the question, what is it that causes the living entity when the living entity wants to do something, and as if by force, something else is done? Why is that? Right? Krishna asks that question in Bhagavad Gita. And the answer that Arjuna receives is because of contact with the mode of passion, that's the conditioning, like your heavy-duty conditioning mode, and that contact with passion turns into strong desires. Someone spoke like that. We have, Vignesh, that was yours, right? We have strong desires. Kamesha, Krodesha. Rajoguna Samudbhava. We're impelled by the modes of nature. Conditioned by the modes of nature. And so even the soul is saying yes. The modes are saying no. And the mind is saying no way. So there are different sitting places of that lust, and that's three: the mind, the senses, and the intelligence. And so we need to do more chanting, right? We have to have more means of purification, and more reading of Bhagavad Gita, and more taking the association of devotees, and bearing in mind what our purpose is, like, you know, becoming attracted to Krishna. In the in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes another problem. You ready? Okay. The other problem is Vignesh sometimes daydreams and is, you can see his mind is, so I'll capture your attention here. The soul is in an incompatible situation. We're in an ocean of matter, and we have nothing to do with matter. But once you're in contact with matter, it's a problem, because if the assignment is to get out of contact with matter and go to spirit, go to Krishna, how are you going to do that? How's a nice guy or nice lady going to do that? Because anything that you do, it involves matter. And as soon as you engage yourself in matter, you're further entangled in the laws of action and reaction, karma. So what are you going to do? You can't do nothing either. Krishna says you can't, because the soul is active. How can you do nothing? And if you actually tried to do nothing, you'd perish. The soul wouldn't perish, but you can't sustain your existence without doing something. So you have to do something. You can't do nothing, and you can't do something either, because as soon as you do something, you're entangled further in material complexity. You know, you've heard that, the catch 22, or damned if you do and damned if you don't. Do or do not, you're stuck. So what's the path out? The third chapter of Bhagavad Gita teaches yajna. What does yajna mean?
Sacrifice.
Very good. And when one says sacrifice, immediately that one should think, sacrifice unto whom? Now, if you ask an impersonalist, their answer to that question is, not unto whom. Just sacrifice. That was an answer one of our devotees got when he was speaking before a classroom, a group of college students. in the audience was a trained impersonalist. Sacrifice? Just sacrifice. Yajna. But Bhagavad Gita teaches sacrifice unto Krishna. And by sacrifice unto Krishna, something very wonderful happens. A secret door opens. The door to Krishna opens. There's a way by which everything that's of this world can be sanctified and spiritualized and elevated to of the same quality as the spiritual world. We were discussing this a little bit about in our morning Bhagavatam class about electricity and a copper wire. So a copper wire is not electricity, but it can conduct electricity. So if the copper wire is in contact with the electrical supply, you plug it into the wall, then the copper wire can deliver electricity just by that connection with the electric socket, as long as you paid your bill. Then you get electricity on the other end. And you can experience it. Grab a hold of a live wire. Oh, that's electricity. Similarly, you can experience Krishna through the medium of devotional service, because devotional service is connecting through sacrifice things unto Krishna. It's very nice. Very simple, practical principle, and it's described. All of that was just to prepare us for reading chapter 4, text 24, Bhagavad Gita. Okay, this is the adult class now. The kids can do your scribbling and picture drawing and all that. Okay. You can pay attention too. That's nice. The verse from Bhagavad Gita, 4:24. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagnau brahmanahutam brahmaiva tena gantavyam brahmakarma samadhina. Brahma karma. That sounds like a contradiction. Karma means work. And work is on the material platform. It's an action that has its reaction. But what's action that has no reaction? It's Brahma karma. It's spiritual work. Spiritual activity. It's spiritual activity when the principle of sacrifice connects the activity to the Supreme, to Vishnu. Yajna vai Vishnu. In fact, Yajna is another name of Vishnu. One of the forms of the Lord that appears within this world. His name is Yajna. Yajna is sacrifice, and sacrifice is Yajna. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead who appears to receive our offerings. Here's the translation, and I'll read a little bit from the purport. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, that's Brahma karma, spiritual activity, is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. So three times in the purport, Prabhupada explains that when sacrifice is properly done, there are multiple things involved in the process of sacrifice that become elevated to the spiritual platform. The offering, the act itself, the consuming agent of such offering or contribution, like in a sacrificial fire, the fire becomes not just fire, like the material element, but it becomes the tongue of Vishnu. And when you pour the ghee and the grains into the fire, when the yajna is done in a proper and standard way, one is actually making offerings to Vishnu in that way. the process of consumption, the contributor, and the result. So, like, you know, we say the sacred fire or the sacrificial arena, the whole place becomes sanctified. The brahmana who is performing the yajna, the mantras themselves, the oblations themselves, and the contributor, you know, the person who is, you could say, sponsoring that activity, they're deriving spiritual benefit if it's done properly, if you have a qualified brahmana who can chant the mantras properly and is situated in knowledge of Brahman. They're situated spiritually, then that's what takes place. Following this verse in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna then describes different ways in which different individuals apply this principle. Some do it this way, some do it that way. Some sacrifice this, some sacrifice that. But the essence principle is the principle of sacrifice. It's the satisfaction of Vishnu. Just as different persons have different propensities, we can say, you know, the Varnashram system. It's not just that someone is an intellectual, okay, so they're a brahmana, someone is an administrator, okay, they're a kshatriya, someone else is good at agriculture or trade and commerce, okay, they're a vaishya, and then you just do their thing, and somehow they become situated in transcendence. That's not the principle that's spoken of here. But rather that each activity is done for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Just like your question about in the workplace, how does one go to the workplace and stay fixed in the internal potency of Krishna, that you do what you do for Krishna, for the satisfaction of Krishna. The principle of sacrifice in any situation, if done properly. And especially, just like we heard this very nice answer about you need to chant more. If those activities are combined with chanting, then they themselves become as liberating as the direct devotional activity. Here's what Lord Vishnu says to Lord Brahma in Brahma Samhita. Because Brahma is very intelligent. He's like super intelligent. He's not just like intelligent. He's got any engineer PhD, you know, quadruple PhD. He puts him to shame. He knows how the whole thing goes together before picking one apart to look at it and figure out this moves that over there and cause and effect. Okay, now I can duplicate it. He did it the first time around. Everything, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, civil engineering, all engineering. He's the dean. And he didn't have to go to engineering school. He's the original professor. He just received knowledge from Krishna. And he had this concern. So what to speak of ourselves? He had this concern that said, I'm going to create a universe. And I've had all this nice realization about you, but I'm afraid that if I engage myself in matter, I'll become entangled in matter. And I'll be implicated in the conditioning of the material energy upon me. What to do? So Lord Vishnu describes that if those very same activities that, yes, are ordinarily material, but if they're joined with the activity of chanting and remembering the personality of Godhead, then they're as liberating as the direct devotional activities. You don't have to stay at home in your puja room and 24/7 just do pujas and chant and stay away from any interaction or go live in a cave and be a recluse, live a secluded life. That's recommended for the meditational yoga system, dhyan yoga system. But for the principle of bhakti, where it's recognizing all matter comes from Krishna, then one can engage that material energy in service unto Krishna while remembering Krishna because we chanted nicely, right? And we read Bhagavad Gita nicely. Okay. I'm trying. So think about it. Here in this material world, any direction you look, there is material energy. You look in front of you, look behind you, look to the left, look to the right, look below you, look above you. In the, you know, 16 directions. We're in a sea of material energy. Anywhere you move, it's material energy. You can't, like, get away from it. It's material energy everywhere. And our objective is to get to Krishna. And it's a problem. Unless one understands the art of transforming that which is originally from Krishna, but now has become separated, to join that which was originally from Krishna again with Krishna. And that's the principle of sacrifice. One has to be in proper consciousness, and one has to be properly guided how to very artfully connect things again with Krishna. Because otherwise, you know, nice try, but we end up getting entangled in the material energy again. Even with good intention. There's a nice section of the Bhagavatam where this idea is described in a different way. Basically, it's the same message. It's towards the very end of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So picture, here's Maharaj Parikshit, who has heard cantos 1 through 9. So he's like ready to hear the 10th canto. And he's not, you know, a slouch. He's Maharaj Parikshit. He's already dear to Krishna. Even before he was born, he was dear to Krishna. And a lifetime of service to Krishna. And now hearing the first 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami with rapt attention. And then he hears the whole 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He's absorbed in Krishna. And even Maharaj Parikshit at that point has a doubt. And his doubt is, I'm feeling perfectly satisfied and peaceful, but how did it happen? Because all that we've been doing is I've been listening and you've been speaking, but the ear that I'm listening with, it's material. And the tongue that you're speaking with, it's material. So how do we use something material and something material to get to a spiritual place? It's another way, it's the reverse way of asking the question that I was asking. He's already there. How did it happen? We're over here saying, how do we get there? And it's a very detailed, complex, read it 20 times and you still are wondering what was that all about. It's very, very deep. It's the personified Vedas discussing amongst themselves this topic. And the 4 Kumaras also are present. It's very intricate, but I'll give it in a very simple form because Prabhupada does from the purports. The simple form is that because everything has its existence emanating from Krishna, originally everything is connected to Krishna. And when we again connect something to Krishna, its spiritual potency becomes restored. So the tongue can act in a spiritual way, and the ear can act in a spiritual way, enter that sound vibration, spiritual sound vibration, connection with Krishna through consciousness can be restored. And the same is true for the whole field of the material energy, in principle, by the act of sacrifice. Through sound vibration, connecting that which is from Krishna unto Krishna. So we have these things working against us, our conditioning, our desires, our weak spirit, as Krishna says to Arjuna, Hridaya Dorbalyam, weakness, petty weakness of heart. We know what we should do, but we're lazy, basically, complacent. Maybe tomorrow. I'll get to it. Like, you know, as if it's forever. So, some sense of urgency or strong sense of purpose needs to become part of what will get us to Krishna. Because otherwise the binding forces of material nature are very strong. So, Nityam Bhagavata Sevya, the very nice answer Richard gave, the service to the devotees. So if we stay always in the association of devotees, stay in the association of those who are like-minded souls who want to go to Krishna. And in that association we try to serve those same persons. It's such a nice situation. They're trying to serve and we're trying to serve. Not I'm trying to dominate and they're trying to dominate, so we struggle. I'm trying to serve and they're trying to serve. Very nice. And when Krishna sees that, he smiles. And Krishna smiles, you're halfway there. Because he then just picks you up and takes you the rest of the way. When that mood of service becomes awakened in the heart, through service unto the devotees, then service unto Krishna becomes, it's natural. It's natural. And last point, in Rishabhdev's teachings, a very nice section for anyone that wants to progress spiritually, because Rishabhdev is an incarnation of the Lord and is teaching his 100 sons how to make their lives perfect. And all 100 of them made their lives perfect. He was a good teacher. And they were good students. And he describes that this human form of life is not meant, like that 7-year-old described, that the senses want gratification. His teaching is that animals live that kind of an existence, but the human form of life is not meant to live like the animals live, simply chasing after sense gratification. A human being that lives that way is, practically speaking, on the platform of an animal, because the human form of life is a higher purpose. And that higher purpose is tapo divyam, or it's achieved through transcendental austerity. And austerity sounds like, you know, uh-oh. Here comes the Swami speaking about austerity. But what it's not a harsh message. Austerity is simply withdrawing the senses from that platform of sense gratification and paying more attention to the soul that says, I want to go to Krishna. Foregoing some immediate gratification for the purpose of some higher gain. Life is filled with such things. Take school, for example. Children like to play. And at some point, the parents say, okay, you're 5 years old, time to go to school. I want to play. I was asking one young boy who's I've known the family for years. They moved from one school district to another school district. So I asked him, how do you like the two? How do you compare the two? He said, I like the one that we have now better. Okay, why do you like the one you have now better? There's more time to play. That was the standard of which is better. And he's a, you know, bright, straight A student, but he, you know, that's the standard. It's more time to play. Anything about the teachers or the size of the classes or, you know, anything like that? Yeah. So there's a longer term gain besides playing, and that's, life is filled with such things. So rather than the short term, one looks for the long term, and that's that to the sense gratifier, that looks like pain. I can't just do it. I have to defer, and so to some higher thing that I can't even relate to right now. So life is filled with that, and spiritual life is also understanding the long-term purpose as part of what Vignesh's answer was, that our attraction to Krishna is not sufficiently strong. So although we may say, I want to go to Krishna, oh yeah? We have other things that we also want to do. It's not so strong. So part of the being in the association of devotees, part of the service that we have for the other devotees is to help make that attraction strong. And when you have that service-mindedness amongst the members of the Vaishnava community, then the community really takes off. We're simply, our service unto one another is that. And if that's what's going on, consciousness becomes very quickly elevated. The level of happiness that each person is experiencing becomes elevated. It's very attractive. It makes it easier to do that U-turn and stay on track going to Krishna. Okay. Stop there and see if there's any discussion or questions. This is a great space for a program. Really like it. Become our suburban Hare Krishna temple. Very nice. Anything? Yes.
At school, we were talking today, like, in this one thing, Mr. Stout was talking about, like...
Mr. Shaw was talking about...
Mr. Stout?
Stout.
Strout.
Strauss.
Oh, Stout.
Shout?
Mr. Stroud.
Stroud.
Yeah. Oh.
The body's made of chemicals and stuff.
And,
okay.
But here we say that Brahma created the body, so it confused me.
That confused you? What did Brahma make the bodies from?
Five material elements.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so you want to compare the system of chemicals and the five material elements. It's just another way of looking at it. Instead of saying earth, water, fire, air, and sky, they have their table. Here's a third one. Then we can make, you know, a fourth one and a fifth one. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about the eight separated energies. Right? You know what they are? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. What's the other three? Your dear friend. Yeah, okay. Okay. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. So that's a system of eight separated energies. Now we'll go to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Lord Kapiladeva teaches Devahuti that the world is made up of 24 elements. We'd like to know what those 24 elements are? Okay. We'll do some lists. There's 5, 5, and 5, and 5, and then 3, and then 1. So the 5 elements that Krishna speaks of, and then the 5 elements, the 5 senses, the 5 sense objects, the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, there's 5 working senses, 5 knowledge acquiring senses, 5 elements, and 5 objects of the senses. That's 20. Then there's 3, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then he has this 24th element that's called Cheta, and it's translated in different ways in the Bhagavatam. One is contaminated consciousness, or another is the sum total of material ingredients. Quite different explanation, but 24 elements. So here's 24 elements, and here's 8. Is that confusing? Just a different way of saying the same thing. So now we'll go to Mr. Stroud, Mr. Stroud, and he's describing the chemical table. That's another way of saying it. There's a reason why the Vedic way of saying it is the way that it is. It's like, let's say, medicine. You know, one idea of medicine is using this system, but there's another idea of medicine that's using the 8 or the 24. Like, you know, when the Ayurvedic doctor takes your pulse, you ever had gone to an Ayurvedic doctor? You ever had anyone take your pulse? When you had a fever, okay. So those that know the science can just, you know, feel your pulse and say, this is what's going on. There's too much fire in your system. What do you mean there's too much fire in my system? Or there's too much vata. You know what vata means? It's air. Too much air in my system. Or too much mucus in your system. So those are combinations of those elements. This element, that element, that element makes this. You know, your constitution. So they can then say, okay, you need a certain medicine that diminishes this part of your makeup and increases another one, and then you'll become well. The other system is you need this tablet that has more of this. Something. This chemical connects with that thing over there, and you're better again.
And from yesterday, from the temple, like at the on Sunday when you talked about Krishna is like all and stuff, does that mean that Krishna is pouring on or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. You're okay with that, Mr. Stroud? And you're not confused anymore? Okay. It's another system of looking at it. Another way of looking at it. So, Krishna is Purnam, but when Krishna... There's something very special about Purnam. When Purnam expands into other Purnams, he's not diminished. He's still Krishna. So that means he's complete. There's nothing material like that. There's nothing material. You take the biggest possible thing that your mind can imagine and take away something, and it's less, however big that something was. But Krishna is so big, he makes another complete something, and he's not diminished. He's not material. And so when Krishna expands, Everything is within him in the sense that it's all his energy and therefore it's within him. But Krishna is outside of everything. He's Purnam. Nice, huh? Our Krishna is so nice. Anything else? Yes? You want to know about the size of the soul?
Size and also it's made up of... is there any... like something about the description about the soul?
I can't read your mind, so you're going to have to say it.
The
description of the soul?
Soul, like
the soul... size, the size... well, the size and then the rest gets kind of, I don't know what you want. The size is from the scripture... Keshagrashata Bhagasha, it's 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. What that means, Prabhupada says, it's subatomic. You take a tip of a hair, divide it into 100, take one of those 100s and divide that into 100. You can't get an instrument that's fine enough to do that. That's the size of the soul. And that size, because that you're asking, it's so powerful it animates a big elephant or a little insect or a microbial germ or a human being or an Albert Einstein. No, it's the soul. It's not, you know, it's not the synapses of the neural system or in the brain that make someone intelligent. It's the presence of the soul. And the super soul gives intelligence to the soul. Especially for the soul to go to Krishna. But the super soul also gives intelligence to the soul to do anything.
So soul is not full of knowledge?
The soul is, but the soul... what is that full of knowledge state? It's in relationship with Krishna. Nice example is the example of the spark. That's in relation with the fire, it's giving off heat and light. But take that same spark, put it over there. And it's glowing for a while, and then... So the innate consciousness of the soul becomes diminished, proximate or distant from... or it becomes diminished, distant. It doesn't exhibit the fullness of that knowledge capacity unless it's in relation to Krishna. And then relation to Krishna, the fullness of knowledge is there. Matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha, from Bhagavad Gita. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto, he's situated in the heart of every living being. Not just in the heart of the body, but in the heart of the soul. That's the living being. It's fascinating. The soul is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. One of Prabhupada's disciples described to me, he was asking Prabhupada this question. Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam describes that the soul is about 8 inches tall, super soul, like between thumb and forefinger, or 6 inches tall, 6 to 8 inches tall. And that spirit soul, that Paramatma, is within the heart of the living entity. That's 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. Can you explain that? Not just in, you know, the muscle, heart, but it's in within the soul, which is within the heart. And Prabhupada's answer was, what is the problem? The soul is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, and the super soul is 6 inches tall. So he thought Prabhupada perhaps didn't understand his question. So later on, in the same, you know, room conversation, he asked the same question and got the same answer. So the soul is conscious, but the soul, the manifesting of that consciousness depends upon the connection that's established with Krishna, just like Lord Brahma, the most intelligent being in our universe, because of his intimate relation with Krishna.
I happen to meet a doctor.
Okay.
In our hospital he works, but he retired. He started a real estate business.
Okay.
So sometimes he visits. So last couple of weeks before, like after our Janmashtami, so I happened to see him. So he was telling me like, tell your friends about the real estate things, stuff like that. So we started talking like that.
Okay.
So I said, oh, you should have given us ad. So we just finished the Janmashtami, so you can, we have a book. So like that I started.
Uh-huh.
So my sister, she's also in ISKCON. She's in Canada, like he was telling. She has a Jagannath Baldi's Bhakta Dietaries, like just the, likewise the conversation started. And then I talked about soul and body and stuff like that. And suddenly he was telling, yeah, I know all the stuff, you know, sometimes I travel to sun, like he was telling.
He channels the sun?
He travels to sun.
He travels to the sun. Okay.
So I was like...
Oh, ask him, how is it there?
Yeah. I
it's very hot.
So it was like Sunday, the next day I went to my work after...
He travels to the sun on Sunday.
So he was telling, so I was kind of confused. I asked him, like, what you're telling to me. Like, he said, no, yeah, I travel to the sun, he said. So how you travel? No, you're during, when we dream, we're during our sleep time.
Okay.
So we go to, you know, our conscious goes to the deep sleep and our soul travels to the sun. So I asked him, so you travel every day, like I asked. So he said, yeah, whenever I want. So, and then, so he told me like the reason. So how we go to the sun, like when I was asking, he told me, you know, our soul doesn't feel anything. So it doesn't feel, I mean, that's the reason. I mean, you know, a lot of things he was telling to me.
That sounds like it.
I was a little bit scary. And I said, okay, then I want to stop the conversation. He was like, I asked him, who is your guru? Are you going to any kind of organization or anything? He didn't tell me clearly, but he was telling me, like, actually, he's Indian. He came from Mumbai long time before.
Okay.
So he said...
where are we going with this conversation? Is there a punchline to all of this?
It's like, no, he was telling me that...
where are we going? You have a question.
Yeah.
What's your question?
Question is like, he said like the soul travels when we go to the sleep, that something, I mean, I didn't believe it, but he has some guru and, you know, he's Shivaites, I think, and he talks about...
you want to understand what that's all about? That's what your question is? What this man is talking about, where's it coming from? That's what you want to know?
Do you know
what you want to know?
No, yes, no, that I was telling that. I was wondering, like, he was talking about the soul.
Place a question so we can bring closure.
Okay. The question is, like, I didn't believe what he said, but...
Present a question so we can bring closure.
The soul... Does the soul travel like that?
Here's something that Prabhupada taught about, you know, the soul when people are asleep. He said when you wake somebody up in the morning, they're asleep, you should wake them gently, because the soul may have gone a far distance away and it may take some time for them to return. He said tap them on the feet, because then the soul can return. So the mind is what's traveling, and for the consciousness to be animated, the soul must be there. So wherever you're dreaming, you go there in your dream. But it's just a dream. It's just a dream. It's not go to the sun. It's just a dream. But subtly, because the mind is subtle, The mind speed is very fast, and the mind can go very zoom zoom, very fast. And when the mind goes, the soul is there animating. Otherwise the mind can't go. It just don't matter. And so the body is in a resting state. Consciousness, there's these three states of consciousness. Awake, sleep, and deep sleep. And sleep while dreaming is that one. And it's all, you know, one can experience things, but it's just a dream. Like, you know, supposing you have a bad dream. There's some wild animal chasing. Rawr! It's a lion. Ah! And you scream and you wake up and there's no lion. But in the dream there was a lion. And you're perspiring and, you know, shaking and your heart's palpitating and there's no lion. Etc. Anything else? I'd like to add on some other topic than that one. Yes.
You're saying Nityam Bhavati Seva initially, and later you are mentioning serving each other, like devotee association serving each other.
Yeah.
Increasing attraction to Krishna.
I'll repeat the question.
So, like, may I ask you to give some clarity on this? And, like, how do we serve Bhagavata? I mean,
how do we serve Bhagavata? Is his question.
So, Bhagavata by serving the devotee.
By serving the devotee. Because the term, well, Bhagavata means the devotee or the book. It's if I can remember Prabhupada's explanation, the root is Bhagavan and the ablative becomes Bhagavata. It's in relation to Bhagavan. And so the book is the Bhagavata and the person is Bhagavata because they're in relation to Bhagavan. So how you serve the book Bhagavata is you hear the message of the book Bhagavata. And one should do that nityam, regularly. And the person, Bhagavata, there are varieties of ways that you can serve a person. A person who is the person Bhagavata. One of the most important ways is to hear the topics of Bhagavan from the person Bhagavata. Most important service. Then another is the carrying out of those things that you hear. That's a very important part of serving the person Bhagavata or the book Bhagavata. But other principles of how to serve, we saw that on Sunday with Narada in his previous life in relation to the Bhakti Vedantas or the person Bhagavatas. He heard, he rendered menial service. You know, some little something. And he carried out the things that they requested of him. He honored their prasad when they gave him permission to do so. Those are services. Serving the person. And serving the book, Bhagavata. Is that all right? Okay, yeah.
Hi Maharaj, I'm always very touched by Narada Muni's story. Because I always I feel like just for 4 months the Bhaktivedanta stayed with his mother and me, and I've had so much association and so much mercy has come into my life, but you know, I'm
you're a slow learner compared to Narada. So let us praise Narada Muni rather than, you know, berate ourselves. and follow his example. So if, and whether it takes, you know, this much time or that much time or that much time, or the principle is wonderful. And one should adhere to the principle and appreciate how fortunate he was. Very fortunate. Yeah.
So, Maharaj, is it that quality of gratitude that is what...
That's certainly important. Certainly important. Universally important. Okay. Yeah.
Why do we experience complacency?
What's that?
Why do we have complacency?
Why do we have complacency?
Even though we don't want it.
Even though we don't want it. It's the modes of nature, complacency. You know, it's like you just tell the mode of nature, go away. It's not that simple. we're inspired when, in part, we don't like pain. And when there's pain, we're less complacent. When there's danger, we're less complacent. When everything is very nice, complacent. Tendency is there. Sankalpa, vikalpa. It's like, you know, work very hard. 5 days, I got to have my 2-day weekend. And I have to have some vacation. And when the vacation, Prabhupada describes like that, when the vacation is over, one is ready to go back to work. It's, you know, it's the mind. I want to enjoy. I'm working very hard so I can enjoy. Then I can enjoy. And when one is enjoying, one is thinking of all the things that one has to do when one goes back. Sankalpa, vikalpa. It's Vignesh's answer is an answer to your question. You know, it's on the one hand it's our material attraction, and on the other hand it's the weak condition of our understanding who is Krishna really, what our human mission is. If we understand what our real purpose of life is, and that will come about by asking the question, what's the real purpose of life? What's my real mission? I'm here for... There's a nice illustration. There's a person sitting with his back to you, and over on this side is a big hill. It's like a child in a womb. And over on that side is death, another big hill. And there's this opening in between called life, in between birth and death. And what are we supposed to do? What's our mission? When we have a clear sense of mission, then complacency is Prabhupada said about myself, I can say one thing. I was never lazy. And fixing the mission of life very clearly, then everything moves with that mission. But if the mission is not transcendental or transcendence, then once I have everything nice, complacency. C. siesta. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.